It's Great Mondays Radio. I'm Josh Levine, your host, founder of Great Mondays. We help executives from hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations build cultures that attract, engage, and retain top talent. If you'd like to be a guest on our program, hang out for about 20 minutes and I'll tell you how. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Great Mondays Radio. Well, I think a lot of us think about how we can survive work. But today's guest, author Bree Groff, is telling us that actually work can be fun. And her new book, Today Was Fun, a book about work, gives us a guide to believe that it's possible. And you know, all know that I believe that it's possible to have fun at work. And she's basically written this guide on all of the ways that we can actually make work fun again. Bree Groff, thank you for coming on Great Mondays Radio.
Yay. Thanks for having me, Josh.
So, there's a lot of books about work, but I don't think there are very many that say work should be fun or advocate for it. It's more like, how do you do better at work? Why did you decide to write this book and with such an optimistic, positive, almost in disbelief. I feel like you're poking at the world, right? You're challenging the world with your book.
Yeah. Yes. It's, you know, I think in a world where we're considered human resources by and large, having fun at work is an act of rebellion. It's a way of saying my days matter. My pleasure matters. My Mondays matter because I'm going to run out of Mondays at some point, definitely. Mm-hmm. And so if I am giving one to you, organization, then I want it to be well spent. It's different than most business books because you can pick up a million and one business books that make the connection between engagement and performance, which is so important, right? And like, it's almost so well documented at this point. Like, thankfully, you know, lots of research, Gallup does tons of research in this area, that I hope we're finally coming to a point where leaders are like, okay, I believe you.
If we haven't convinced you yet, right, that you need to make sure that your employees are engaged, right?
Then right.
I don't know what else to tell you.
Yes. Right. And like, and also for leaders, hopefully it makes intuitive sense too. You see somebody who's like jamming out at work, using all their talents, having a great time, taking such pride in their work, helping others. Like, that's an employee you want. So I felt pretty good about that argument that we had out in the world. What I didn't see as much of, or hardly at all, is the existential case for engagement. Hmm. Which is, from an individual's perspective, not only do I want to perform well to serve my company's bottom line, presumably, but also I want to be enjoying my days simply because I'm a human who only gets so many of them. So the genesis of the book came about a few years ago. I had a sort of a personal reckoning. My mother was diagnosed with a terminal cancer. She passed away later that year. But in the 9 months I cared for her, I spent so much time at the hospital in the cancer center. And to look around and know that every one of those patients is hoping for more days, that's the world I was living in. Contrast that with, I talked to a friend back at the office, and in corporate environments, everyone's not hoping for more days. They're hoping for Friday. They are trying to get through their days as fast as possible such that they can enjoy 2/7 of their lives for whatever 40, 50 years that they're working. And I thought, no, this is an emergency because we're not thinking rationally about the value of our days. And as a thought experiment, you take a company that has a great bottom line, is making a decent product out in the world, and everybody's miserable. Is that a good company? I think no. I think actually that company maybe shouldn't exist if what it's consuming is human days. So I wrote the book to share what I've learned in all my time of helping companies, such, you know, as you do, with their cultures and engagement.
I want to focus in on one or two particular points that you make. And the one of the ones that that spoke to me, I haven't read the book yet because it's not out, but or it will be out by the time that everybody hears this, is about kind of the, when you are busy and when you are not feeling it, when you're not having fun, using your terminology, you're not doing your best work. Can you tell me a little bit about sort of this idea of brilliant work and what that means to you, and how, and the connection between this fun and driving that kind of, I don't know, I guess we can use the term engagement.
For sure. So when I use the word fun, I guess I'll start here. Some people are like, oh, happy hours, like offsites. Ping pong tables was the classic example, right, for ages. And you know what? I'm pro ping pong. I'm pro happy hour. Like, all those things are great.
Yeah.
But also, mostly what I mean when I say fun is fun in the work. Like, as you are actually accomplishing the thing that's creating the value, that too should and can be fun.
Yes.
So when you're asking about brilliant work, being creative and brilliant in what you do is a big part of the fun. And I like the words brilliant and creative. And I know sometimes we hear those things and think like, oh, sure, like maybe some, I don't know, ad executive or, you know, someone in an innovation role can do that, but not me, the, you know, middle manager of onboarding. But I would argue in any role, there's opportunity for some kind of creativity or self-expression or brilliance. Like, even the program managers that I've worked with, I've seen genius project plans.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I've seen genius onboarding orientations. Like, there's always some way to express your point of view on the world, to play a little bit. And I would argue too, we do ourselves a disservice when, in fear, consciously or unconsciously, we just try to make our work look like everyone else's work so that it appears presentable and we don't get in trouble or we don't push too far. But I think that's a disservice to the business and to the individual, because when we can play a little bit, like, imagine you're designing this onboarding orientation. I don't know. Maybe you bring in little umbrella picks and hand them out so everyone can put it in their coffee or their bubble water on orientation. And now you've got like a festive atmosphere, right? Like, the $4 you spent on umbrella picks is not going to affect your company's bottom line, but you've done something kind of playful that made someone smile.
I want to take just sort of pause on that term. Like, you were saying the work is, or at least I heard, like, I want to do work that is good enough. And I hear there's sort of like, I am coming from a place of fear, right? It's like, it needs to be good enough. It needs to be, as you know, it's like, I'm looking at good enough from below. And I'm saying, okay, this is what's expected, and I'm doing good enough. And then there's also the, I'm really busy, that's good enough. Mm. And I feel like those are both terms. It's sort of, they converge on the same thing as everybody else. So whether you're coming from the bottom or, you know, from below or from above good enough, you are either coming from a place of fear or coming from a place of busyness. And what I hear you saying is it is worth your energy to think about how you might make it better than good enough.
Yes. And I guess as an asterisk to what I shared, I would say yes and strategically. So I would never argue people need to do their expense reports brilliantly and creatively. Like, just do that shit normal, you know, like get it done. You'll be good.
Fewer emojis on your expense report. This isn't Venmo.
Right. Accounting is like, my God. yeah. But if you're looking to have that feeling of vitality and play and exploration and a little bit of adrenaline at work, that all of those things that make us give us the sensation of having fun, then find one part of your role where that sort of brilliance is actually a needle mover. So, you know, in the example I just made up here, it's orientation and you've got little umbrella drinks for everybody. That didn't take a ton of time or investment. It's maybe an idea that you had that you're like, oh, what is everyone going to think of me? Like, is this like too much, too far? You know, you're sort of wrestling with the whole conformity and professionalism thing. Look, different company cultures will react to that differently. Mm-hmm. But if you think there's a shot, people would smile and feel like it brightened their day, then that's the kind of low lift, not adding a whole bunch of stuff to your plate, but a low lift tweak to some of your work that lets you be a little mischievous, perhaps is a good way to put it, or just like a little bit playful. And those ultimately are the things that people remember. Like if you, like your new hire is going home to say, guess what they put in my coffee this morning? A little umbrella pick. Like it's memorable. And so those sorts of small acts of creativity is what makes work feel fun sometimes.
I love this, being a, you know, inherently creative guy. Like I feel my day isn't complete unless I've created something. It could be anything. And so I'm definitely in that camp, and inherently it's worth it for me. There are two, I'm going to push back, and there's two factors that I'm thinking about that I think will prevent people will need to overcome. Let's put it in that way.
Sure.
One is, and you mentioned this, right? So one is the fear of looking stupid. So risk. And this is such an oppressive, the fear of stupid is I feel one of the largest scourges that we've not talked about enough in corporate America. Mm-hmm. Fear of looking stupid. So that's one, risk. And you mentioned that a little bit. And two is energy. So we have limited amount of energy. I have so many things to do, Bree. I don't have, I'm just going to try to do it. I'm just going to try to do it. So how can I think you already addressed this idea of the fear of stupid. You're like, just do a little something that might be a little braver.
In a small way.
In a small way.
You can start as small as you like. Yeah.
And it's mm-hmm. going to, and so, and then talk to me about how you think about energy management. Because to me, when I observe myself, my colleagues, my clients, it's just like, I only have so much energy to put into this.
I totally get it. I have been there myself of like, I'm just trying to have nobody mad at me. Like I'm trying to return the email. So no one's like, where's your response to this email?
And I you just know, like one day with nobody mad at me.
I know. Well, and like, I get like, I totally understand that. And I will also say there are some roles or some moments in our lives when just getting by is good enough. And that's okay. When or if you do get sort of a creative impulse for, maybe we should try doing it like this or do, you know, try something a little bit different. The energy management is important because, as I said, you don't need to make everything brilliant. I think it was Tim Ferriss who said, doing an unimportant task well does not make it important. And so it's a reflection on, you can think of your own role. Like, what is the real value that you bring to your role? And I will say too, this is changing in an age of AI, where the busyness of, like, I'm writing all the emails and doing all the reports and doing all the research or whatever that is that you do, is being aided or replaced by AI so much more so now.
Yeah.
So the question is, what is unique about my human brain that my company values? So for my world consulting, I'm thinking about, what is the one component of this project that if we do it a little bit creatively or with a little bit of innovation, it's going to blow the client's mind. Like, that's what I'm looking to do. I'm trying to, like, make big change, like big impact. And a lot of times that comes from human imagination still. I don't know about AI in 50 years, but for now, that's the case. So when we're really, really busy, it's a question of, am I hired as a marketing manager because I can send emails really fast? No. I'm hired maybe because I have a really good instinct for customers. So if that's true, then spend, I don't know, 30 minutes in a day, just like thinking time, get yourself a cup of coffee and think like, okay, what do I know about our customers? What do I know about what they're interested in? Oh, actually, they're really have been into this blah, blah trend that, like, I wonder if we could capitalize on that a little bit. So it's being smart about what your unique human brain is good for.
Yeah. I feel like if I'm going to add my observation, and I sort of,
yeah, please, this,
is that you, one, may actually gain energy from doing something creative. And that's where I, like, I get a little zip. Like, if I'm able to come up with, like, a cute, you know, like, even subject line, I think about, like, my, like, subjects for, like, the, you know, the podcast episode titles, but, or just even just emails, right? Where it's like, just come up with, you know, it's like something, you know, like, not normal for your subject line. I get a little zing. I get a little zip. And that's me. And so I think I would add that for each person, there's going to be something else in their work lives that gives them a little hit of zip that I think they should probably look for and then build on that. Because it's not fun. The fun isn't the same for everyone.
Oh, for sure. Yes. And also, like, the fun won't always be in the work, in the actual creative act of the work too.
Right.
You know, we can think of, like, what are the ways that we diversify our fun and our joy at work? Because for some people, like, take the show The Office, they were not having fun in paper sales. They were having fun because they enjoyed, like,
each other,
pranking each other. Each other simply. Yeah. And so sometimes the joy's in the people. Sometimes you're kind of actually bored of what you're doing, but you love mentorship. Like, and that's where the fun comes from. Or, you know, you don't really like the people, you don't really like the work, but the impact really makes a difference. So when you hear from customers, or, you know, I don't know, maybe you're a doctor and it's, like, enormously stressful and you don't actually like it that much. But when you hear that the impact you had on someone's life, you think, I'm staying in the game. So there's so many ways to find joy at work. You don't need it in all of them, but on the creative avenue that we've been down, I also agree. Like, it's that zing is going to be different for everybody. And it does actually give you more energy, because then you're like, oh, I'm so clever. You know, we should amuse ourselves, I guess.
It for yourself, right? I think the best movie directors, right? Like I heard Seth Rogen talk about, is that his name? Seth Rogen? Talk about, how he writes something that's funny for him.
Yeah.
Right. Like, he's like, I'm doing it for me, not for, like, that's, and I think I thought there's something brilliant about that. All right. So we've talked a lot about at work, in work, on work, but you have a whole chapter on defending your time, because work, as we all know, I don't have to tell you, I don't have to tell anybody listening, that work takes over. And I wanted to know a little bit about kind of Bree's perspective on time defense.
Yeah. So very simply, when we overwork, we underlive. It's just what it is. We all have the same 24 hours. So if you are working 80 hours a week, like, some people love it and are like, thrive on it. And far be it from me to tell anyone to not do something that they love. But also, those 80 hours are coming from somewhere. So tell me, when did you exercise? When did you spend time with friends or family? When did you sleep? All those things. So there is a trade-off. There's an opportunity cost, even when work is fun. I call it defense. Like, you're defending your time from work, because frankly, that's what it feels like to me. A lot of times it feels like work is an invasive species and it will just sort of like creep into other parts of your calendar.
Little by little.
Right. And you have to like, oh, I have to weed this shit again. It's terrible. So it's an act of protection, not only for yourself, like your own health and your leisure and things like that, but I also think of defending your time from overwork as an act of protecting the other people in your life who you love. So my father is Alzheimer's. I'm a caregiver for him. I like handle all of his things. He can't decline a late meeting, right? So if I was going to go and visit him, but now I have a late meeting, if I say yes, then that wasn't up to him. I have a daughter who's 10 years old. Like, if I'm going to say yes to something that's going to keep me up all night, like, she can't say no to that extra project. Only I can. And somehow that framing gives me the extra energy to say, no, I'm going to defend my family. Like, I'm going to be a good defender for them, for the other people in my life who can't say no. So that's sort of my stance on it. More practically, I guess there's like a mindset and then maybe a behavior people can try. The mindset I try and hold on to is that work is a bottomless pit. Like, it just keeps going. You will never get to the bottom. And
more emails you answer, the more emails will be there.
Don't you hate it when you return an email and then someone emails you right back a minute later and you're like, I just got that off.
Yes, stop. That's exactly right. That is the realization, I think, a very modern realization, which is work. It is a black hole, and there will always be more work. You can never get it done. And I feel like, as someone who really loves checking things off the list, like, that's where I get my, mm-hmm. A lot of my fun is this, like, just getting it done. And then it's like, oh, great. Did you get everything done? You're like, no, there's no way. There's no way to get everything done. So you need to, it is a false goal.
Right.
It is a false goal. So if that's the case, then you need to take agency and decide where the kudzu, the work kudzu can't grow.
Yeah, exactly. Right. That is up to you. And like, I've always been amazed. There have been people in my career, other colleagues, who are just like, I'm leaving now. And I'm like, wait, what? Like,
what? Can you do that?
And then they just go. I don't know. It blows my mind.
Early in my career, there was I had one of those moments, and I can't. What? And I love it, right? It's like the moment in the Matrix. You're like bending the spoon. You're like, you can't just get up and leave. Yeah. You're like, yeah, I can. Work's over.
Right? And it's like, and then because my brain, when I see or hear that, I'm like, well, are they getting all their work done? Are they being as productive as they can? Are they annoying their colleagues? Because but I know these people still, they're still gainfully employed. And you know what? They got to have dinner with their family that night. So like, joke's on me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think we have a lot more agency sometimes than I think we do, especially in tough job markets. And when there's insecurity about roles, it's like, oh, I gotta do everything that's ever asked.
Yep.
But really be like, I sometimes cringe to say, because it's like this advice has been given so many times over in so many different ways, but to be like a balanced human being who like sleeps and eats and exercises and enjoys life, is that's actually a more sustainable employee from a business perspective as well.
Yeah.
And it's just a better life. So if you want to go, you just go.
Amazing. Gosh, there's so many other things in the book. I cannot wait to read it. You can check it out. Bree, thank you so much. Bree Groff, author of Today Was Fun, a book about work. Some really incredible insights. You can learn more about her at breegroff.com. I'll spell it BREEGROFF.com. Also a very fun designed site. So thank you for that. Bree Groff, thank you for coming on Great Mondays Radio. It is a pleasure to meet you, and more optimism in the world. Please keep it going.
I'll try. Thanks for having me, Josh.
Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio. Hey, if you want to be a guest, head over to radio.greatmondays.com. And if you think this episode was interesting and your friends and fans would enjoy it, please share on social media. And if you want to get more people to understand the power of company culture in business today, please rate and review Great Mondays Radio on your podcast feed. It really helps us reach more people. If you want to hear more candid conversations with culture leaders, subscribe to Great Mondays Radio. I'd love to connect with you. Find me on LinkedIn at AKA Josh Levine, on YouTube at Great Mondays. And you can always email me, josh@greatmondays.com. Find out more about our work with hypergrowth technology and social enterprise organizations at greatmondays.com. I'm Josh Levine. Thanks for listening to Great Mondays Radio.